I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Christmas morning is a time when many of us get together with friends and family. It's also a time when a growing number of us have to work or to travel. We know you are there with us as well, out on the road or somewhere close to a radio. And so we got to thinking, if we thought we could give you a gift on this morning, what could it be? What would it be? We actually brought some frankincense and myrrh into the studio here. Smell that? No, we didn't think that was going to work. I thought of posing with a turkey all dressed, but, well, that's been tried. I could read you the letters I sent to Santa, which my mother, for some deeply complex reason, collected and has now given back to me, but who'd want to listen to those? And that's when we got the idea. Stories. We can give you the one thing radio has always been able to deliver better than anything else. Stories. Now wait, it gets better. We've asked one of our favorite storytellers, J. O'Callaghan, the bard of Pill Hill, in to join us, and he is here with me in the studio. Jay, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. Thanks. Wonderful to be here.
It's great to have you here. Now, for those of our listeners who are hearing your voice for the first time, I know you've been a sailor and a teacher and a dean and a caretaker and a number of other things, a writer and an actor, but you would put storyteller on your business card if you passed them out on the street corner now, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes, actually, that was a crucial moment in my life, declaring myself as a storyteller first and a writer second. That was the great commitment made, actually, when I was in late 30s, and that began the career.
Now, these are stories which you like to tell. These are stories which you tell on a stage. You have been around the world telling these stories. They're not all stapled together in a book somewhere which you will occasionally read out loud. They are meant to be heard.
Exactly, exactly. The rhythms, it's almost a musical medium. Sound and rhythm and pace, voice and changes. So it's very musical, very different from print.
And you fix most of them in one very special place.
Yes, Pill Hill. Let me tell you a little bit about Pill Hill and then tell you a story.
Paddy! Paddy comes! Paddy! Bones! Bones! Where's my bones?
I grew up in Pill Hill, the edge of Boston. It's a wonderful neighborhood of big old-fashioned houses, and I was 7 when we moved in. We bought a house that had 32 rooms. My parents had no money. They were teachers. They discovered after World War II nobody wanted to heat the big old houses, so we bought it. We didn't heat it. I can remember opening the door for a dinner guest when I was a teenager, saying, "Can I take your coat?" She said, "You certainly may not." Well, it was a house with wonderful carved wood. As a boy, though, what I loved was running out of the house, down the outside back stairs, down the hill, hospital at the bottom, so we called it Forceps Avenue. And I would turn to the right into a sloping woods. It's still there to this day. Not very big, but for a boy, it was huge. That's where it was. The big tree, it was a gray, massive beech tree, 7 realms high, rough like an elephant's trunk. I would climb up different world there. Supper came and Dad would come out and he was very dignified, so he wouldn't shout. All the neighbors would be calling their children and their dogs.
Putty, Putty come.
Florence Beam would be calling, Putty. We know why Putty didn't come. And then Mrs. Lawrence, right across the street, with her wonderful voice, would say, "Bones," calling her sausage dog. She was the Greek chorus of the neighborhood. She had actually been summa cum laude at Wellesley in ancient Greek, and her mind intrigued me. She would talk to the dog.
"What have you been reading today, Bones?"
Dr. Lawrence one night, he said, "I don't like you talking to the dog." She said, "Why not? I didn't say anything important." Everything she said was fascinating.
She said, "You know, I grew up in Canada. The minister would always read the same psalm, 'May goodness and mercy follow you all the days of your life.' I always thought he was saying, 'May the good Mrs. Murphy follow you.' I was always looking for Mrs. Murphy."
Everything she said was fascinating. Oh, Pill Hill, it was very lively, and one of the special times was Christmas. And I loved Christmas Eve. I want to tell you this story called Christmas Candles. When we were children, Christmas Eve, when it was dark, we'd run down the outside back stairs, run across the street, and then we would stop and turn and look at our house. We'd be in darkness, a candle lit in every window. Wow, take our breath away. Dad would do that with my sister Patricia, and she was the most responsible person in the world, so they always did it. Then we'd run across the street to the Lawrences, and Dr. Lawrence would take us Christmas caroling. A few days before Christmas Eve, he would come home from the Faulkner Hospital. He ran the Faulkner Hospital, worked 12 hours a day, but he would come early to rehearse us. We'd all be in the living room, and he'd bend over and conduct us, Veni Te. Then he'd stand up a little taller, Veni Te. Then he'd stand all the way up, Veni Te adoremus. We felt important because he loved music. Well, then came the Christmas Eve when everything was different. My mother is always full of energy. Well, not that Christmas Eve. She looked kind of sad and tired. Just a few days before, she had given birth to my baby brother, Christopher. I had three sisters, but now I had Christopher with this long name. I had a little name, but his was Christopher. I thought I'd come home. Christopher, diapers, carrying the car. Christopher is home. But Christopher had not come home from the hospital. Something was wrong. Maybe his heart. So Mother was worried. The day dragged on, got dark. Dad wasn't home. He was shopping with Uncle Neil, which meant he might come home festive. Phone rang. Mother picked it up, and the doctor said, "Your baby is dying. There's nothing we can do." And he hung up. It was so abrupt. Dad came home, and he heard that. He was furious. He called up and said, "That is no way to tell anyone their child is dying. We're coming right down there." So we all went down to the hospital, down the corridor, and we looked through this glass, and all these little babies were there. One of them was turning blue. It was Christopher. He was dying. So my mother is crying, and another doctor suddenly appeared and said, "You know, there is a new procedure. We replace the blood, and there's a chance. You want me to do that?" "Yes." "We'll know in a few days." So we came home not knowing whether Christopher would live or die. Dad helped Mom up the stairs, down into her bedroom, and he was coming out. He turned around, said to Mother, "Just get some sleep." Then he saw us standing in the hall. He said, "Well, just hope for the best. Nothing you can do. Go Christmas caroling." So we ran down the outside back stairs, ran across the street, and we turned. Oh, I was so disappointed. All the electric lights on. They looked blaring. They looked loud. We forgot the candles. Even Patricia forgot the candles. Dr. Lawrence took us Christmas caroling, and he knew who was hurt in the neighborhood who was sad. And so we'd go to different houses. It took 2 hours, and we came over Pill Hill cold, and we all stopped. Looked at our house all in darkness, and there was a candle lit in every window. Dad had done it. Dr. Lawrence knew what was happening, so he said to us, "I want to sing one more carol, and I want you to do this very well." We walked around to the side of our house, and we were singing the first Noel up towards Mother's window, which was in darkness, but there was the lit candle. Suddenly, Mother appeared in the window. She was wearing a white house coat. She looked like an angel. 10 years later, we were finishing the Christmas caroling on Pill Hill. Dr. Lawrence said, "One more carol." It was a tradition now to sing to Mother's window. So we were singing up to her window, and she was standing there like an angel. I was in my college sweater, feeling very grown up. And I turned, and there was Patricia in the dark, singing away but crying. And I thought, oh, she's crying because she just got married. She's going to Chicago. Then I realized she was crying because she was standing beside Christopher. He was 10 years old.
Jay O'Callaghan, the story is Christmas Candles. It strikes me as a listener. I know it strikes people listening as they hear that story and reflect on moments like that in their own lives, Jay, that it's a time of year when the stories take on something extra.
Mm.
Have you figured out what that is? Why is it that emotions and passions get this kind of magnifying glass over them at this time of year?
I wonder if there is a sense of hope. You know, for Christians, it's a sense of light in the world. And for all humankind, it's a sense of, at least this part of the earth, dark. And light's coming back. Light's beginning to come back, and the promise of the hope of spring. Maybe it has something to do with that. But I agree, things are magnified. And I do think there's something about light and hope coming together.
It's also, I guess, a mark on everybody's calendar that you can think back to who you were with two Christmases ago, where you spent Christmas when you were 14 or 15. I acknowledge more for Christians who make a big deal of the day, but those are big black marks on the calendar, perhaps even more than birthdays, because there's so many people around. Maybe that odd uncle who would show up only once a year.
Yes. It is a gathering time, and it's a funny time. You know, it's funny to read someone like Dylan Thomas having just fun with his memory. So of the uncles, that's what I thought of that, and the aunts and the snoring after the meal. But it's that gathering.
Was it for you on Pill Hill as well? I mean, was it a time when you would come back from college, when you were able to bring the family together?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And all those growing up years of singing the Christmas carols around the neighborhood. I was so struck that we would go to the house of, I remember Mr. Reed. He was maybe in his 90s, and he had been a great football player in Harvard before the turn of the century. But he was alone now. His wife had died. And he opened the door, and his face looked like parchment. And then it softened. Here are these kids singing him a Christmas carol, and we'd never gone to his house before. And he just, he loved it.
That's a gift.
That's a gift.
Big gift to somebody like that at this time of year. Listen, we have to take a short break, and we will come back to hear a couple more stories later in the hour. More from Pill Hill. Jay O'Callaghan is my guest this hour. Just a reminder, Connection listeners, it's not a program when we're taking calls. It's a program when we all get a chance to sit back and listen and reflect on stories from someone else, but then what they tell us about ourselves as well. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to a special Christmas morning version of The Connection. With me in the studio, Jay O'Callaghan. He is known well as our resident storyteller. He's also known around the world for the stories that he tells. And if you're interested in hearing more or reading more of about Jay himself, you can find a link to his website on our website, Pill Hill, Jay. When you do the voices of the people there, I hear this collection of accents, but not only that, but a way of speaking which takes us back a bit.
Yes, and of course Mrs. Lawrence is a favorite. But language, I didn't realize it as a boy, of course, was very important in Pill Hill, the sound of language. Dr. Lawrence across the street, he would lead anybody in Gilbert and Sullivan if he got a chance. He loved singing. Dad loved acting, and he did some Shakespeare and did some modern theater here in Boston. Mum loved language, and that reminds me of a very short story about Mum. When I was a little boy, Dick, I learned two things about Mum. She couldn't stand heights, nor could I tell her about heights. I would say, Mom, I was climbing the big tree today. She would get pale. She couldn't hear about heights. And the other thing is she loved language and was very careful. I'd say, I'm going out, Mom. Going out, you're going out. ING, you're going out. My sisters would say, we're skating today. You're skating, you're skating. Use the language, ING. So the INGs would ring through the neighborhood. When I was 14, we went on vacation. We were up in Maine, and we were tramping up a big hill. I ran way ahead of my parents, and there was a water tower, and I loved climbing. I climbed way up to the top of this water tower. Mama got to the top of the hill. She didn't look up, of course, but I shouted down, Mom, Mom, I'm falling, falling. Automatically, she said, falling, dear, you're falling. Then she looked up, and I saw her fainting in Dad's arms. The language on Pale Hill.
You have a story for us that you call equations.
Yes, equations, equations. X plus Y equals equations. When I was a sophomore in high school, I was sitting in my kitchen doing my algebra homework one night. I did 8 of the problems, and I got stuck on number 9. I just had 10. So I started thinking about my algebra teacher, Miss Flatface. She'd been flapping her face today. She was saying, X, why can't you find X? What kind of mind do you have? A mind is something that finds X. What kind of mind do you want? What kind of mind do you want? The difference between you and a gerbil is X. Go home and think about what kind of mind you want. What kind of mind do I want? I didn't know. But I'm good at equations. I'll give you an equation. Me sitting at a desk, plus 10 algebra problems, equals thinking about girls. Especially Monica Lawrence across the street. She's my girlfriend, but she doesn't know it. Mom came into the kitchen and said, oh, look at the time, dear. Do me a favor, call Edie Lawrence, tell her I'm going to be late for the party. I said, Mom, the Lawrence is having a party in the middle of the week. She said, you know how kind the Lawrences are. There are 20 Canadian doctors traveling around the country looking at hospitals. They want to meet Craig Lawrence, great migraine headache specialist. But Craig said, oh, no, 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 no. Come to the house. Your Canadians will have salmon for you. We'll have turkey. It'll be the salmon and the bird. So I'm going over to make conversation. Craig thought it would be fun if your father came over and pretended he was a medical specialist. I said, Mom, Dad doesn't know anything about medicine. I know that's the fun. I'll tell Mrs. Lawrence. I grabbed my algebra book. I went running across, and we loved to go to the Lawrences because Dr. Lawrence got everybody singing. Carrie Lawrence was 14, long brown hair, quickest laugh in the world. Monica, kind of my girlfriend, and Mrs. Lawrence. Her mind was so interesting. Just last week, my mother had been saying, Edie, we're having a big party November 16th. 7:30, you and Craig come. Mr. Lawrence said, I'll see if I have a lacuna in my calendar. I didn't know what a lacuna was, but it was just like Mrs. Lawrence. And we knew she would come at 7:30, but the question is, which month? She always got the hour right and the month wrong. Well, I was running up the path, and Jones, sausage dog, yapping away at me, Jones, stay down, Jones. I pulled the glass-faceted doorbell. Door opened, and there was Monica with those brown eyes. She looked at me as if I was a birthday present. Hey, Monica, help me with a couple of problems. Oh, Mr. Lawrence, listen, Mom's coming to your big party, the salmon and the bird, but she's going to be late. Mr. Lawrence said, you almost gave me a migraine. You see, the party's on Wednesday. This is Wednesday. Oh, no, today's Tuesday. Monica said, Mom, this is Wednesday. All is lost. Monica opened the freezer, and there was a frozen turkey and 2 frozen salmon. All is misery. Monica said, no, Mom, we have 20 minutes before they're coming. She looked at me and said, help me peel potatoes. Monica and I started peeling potatoes, and once in a while, by mistake, I would get her hand. Mrs. Lawrence went to the bottom of the stairs and said, Carrie, could you make a salad for 25? Then the door opened, and in came the Norwegians. They were graduate students at MIT, living in the top of the Lawrences. There were 3 of them, and the first was Helga. He was my favorite. Helga was 7 feet tall. He was like a sunflower. He bent over so his head was down with ordinary heads. And the next was Jens. Jens was 25, straight as a pencil. Instead of an eraser, he had short brown hair that shot straight up, and Yance was in love with American radio commercials. So he came in singing, "I'm Chiquita Banana, and I'm here to say, bananas have to ripen in a certain way." And the next was Ulf. Ulf was the handsomest. Looked like he was on skis. He was so smooth. Mrs. Lawrence said, "Wait, wait, the three of you, I'm desperate. We have 20 Canadian doctors arriving any moment. Helga, play the piano. Play Gilbert Sullivan. Entertain them so they don't think about food. Jens, you're the bartender. We have Heffenreffer beer in the cellar. Heffenreffer, it sounds Canadian. Get the Heffenreffer. And Ulf, you and I fly to the dining room." So we all got busy. Monica and I peeling potatoes and Carrie slicing tomatoes. Jens came up from the cellar with the Heffenreffer beer, singing, "You can put them in a salad. You can put them in a pie. Any way you want to eat them. It's impossible to beat them." 7 o'clock, I looked out the window. "Mrs. Lawrence, they're not here." She said, "They're coming from New York. With any luck, they'd have 5 flat tires. 15 minutes later, I said, "Mrs. Lawrence, I'm afraid they're here." Great big bus pulled up. The doctors started getting off, and the first 4 doctors were women doctors. One of them, the most beautiful redhead. "She's a ravishing beauty." Then the men doctors, they were conservatively dressed, and they looked tired, drooping. They all came up the path, up the stairs, and then Mrs. Lawrence flung open the door. "Welcome to you, healers of the world." Well, that cheered them up. She shook every hand around the living room, refreshments. The last doctor was a frumpy little man. "Get away, dog. Naughty dog. Get away, dog. Madam, I'm afraid your dog doesn't heed." "I'm so sorry, doctor. I think he speaks only Portuguese."
"I see. Well, I look forward to the salmon."
"So do I. If you go to the living room, refreshments." I got a tray of crackers and cheese and said, "Mrs. Lawrence, don't worry about Dr. Thunderbird. I'll take care of him." I went into the living room, and the doctors were standing around, quiet as undertakers, little groups of 2 and 3, whispering. Helga was in the next room, playing his heart out, "I am a pirate king." Nobody went in. I went right over to Dr. Thunderbrow. "Doctor, would you like crackers and cheese?"
"I'll wait for the salmon, if you don't mind."
I heard, "I'd like some." I turned. It was the beautiful redhead. She took a cracker and cheese, and I wanted to talk to her, but Ulf kind of skied in front of me. Said he would get her white wine. So we turned, and there was Jens. He had set up a bar and a table. He was pouring a Heffenreffer beer for a doctor, and he was singing, "Ajax, boom, boom, the foaming cleanser, floats the dirt right down the drain, boom, 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 boom." Jens didn't know anything about being a bartender. A doctor wanted a scotch. So Jens took a large glass and he filled it with scotch. He filled the next glass with gin. This is going to be a loud party. I was busy going from the kitchen, mashing potato, coming back serving hors d'oeuvres. Then I ran up the back stairs and nipped into the upstairs bathroom. The bathtub was filled with water. Floating in the water was a frozen turkey and 2 frozen salmon. The salmon looked happy, but we were in trouble. I ran into Monica's room. I made a big sign, "Out of order," and tacked it on the bathroom door. I went down the front stairs, and you could hear Helga had about 6 of the doctors singing. "Oh, wandering one." And there in the front hall, the beautiful redhead was dancing with a little bald doctor, and she was singing, "Oh, oh, 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 oh," turning into a party. I went down the hall toward the kitchen. 2 of the doctors in shirt sleeves. They were relaxing. But I was worried. I grabbed the phone and I called, "Mom, come on. It's 8 o'clock. Dr. Lawrence isn't here. Daddy's not here. We have a frozen turkey and 2 frozen salmon. Mom said, "Tell Edie I'm going to run down to the village. I'll get 12 cooked chicken. I will try to get salmon."
Mrs. Lawrence said, "Your mother is a savior. A savior."
The door opened, and in came Dr. Lawrence, and the back door came into the kitchen, and he was very handsome. 3-piece suit, put down the black medical bag, and his brown hair looked like newly plowed earth. Gave Mrs. Lawrence a big hug, and I loved that. They were the only neighbors who hugged in public. He said, "Edie, I'm sorry there was an emergency, but it sounds like a great party. How's the salmon coming?"
"Tend to your guests."
The door opened, and in came Dad. And Dad was a scholar, and he looked very handsome, and Dr. Lawrence grabbed him, introduced him to the 2 doctors in shirt sleeves. "This is my friend, Dr. Heffenreffer."
Dad said, "Please call me Hef."
"My friend Hef here, he's a kidney specialist,
but I like liver and onions, too."
Dad was brought around. He was introduced as a brain specialist, then a heart specialist, and ear, nose, and throat. Everybody was laughing. except Thunderbrow, who was in the corner, reading a little book. Dr. Lawrence tried to charm him. He failed. He introduced Dad.
Well, Dr. Heavenref, how nice to meet you. What's your specialty?
Well, I think it's Pasta Primavera.
I mean your medical specialty.
Well, I thought you knew from my name, Heffenreffer. Now, if you had read the Heffenreffer's study, you would know there are only two cures for migraine headaches. One is an exotic fish, and the other is fudge.
Fudge, Dr. Heffenreffer, fudge. So it's related to diabetes.
Yes. On the mother's side, subtract 2 and add 5.
I see.
He shoved the little book at Dr. Lawrence. He shot off. Dr. Lawrence opened the little book and said, "He reads ancient Greek. We've got him." Well, I followed Thunderbrow into the kitchen.
"Mrs. Lawrence, I'm afraid your husband's having a little fun with me. May I ask how the salmon is coming?"
"Swimmingly."
Off he went. Just then Mother appeared. She said, "Edie, I've got a dozen chicken. I couldn't get salmon. I've got fish. I'll cook, Edie." Dr. Lawrence came down. He said, "Edie, everyone's having fun."
"I know. Everyone's enjoying themselves except Dr. Thunderbrow. I'm not going to deal with him."
"Edie, he reads ancient Greek. He will love you."
"I would rather take the sty out of the Cyclops' eye."
Poor Mrs. Lawrence. She pulled in the living room to try to charm Thunderbrow, but the rest of us brought into the piano room, and Dr. Lawrence got us singing, teaching everybody the Mikado. We're all singing,
"Defer, defer, he is the Lord High Executioner, defer."
We're singing away, so I snuck in the living room to see how Mrs. Lawrence is doing. Thunderbrow is saying,
"Well, Edie, I think you're wonderful. You read ancient Greek so well. What's your favorite play?"
"I like Electra, but Antigone is my favorite."
"Antigone is mine."
She was doing well. Back I went. Now Dr. Lawrence had us all going in a circle. He was in the middle. He was the Lord High Executioner. So we're all bending over.
"Defer, defer."
We're going in a circle. Back I went to see how they're doing. Thunderbrow and Mrs. Lawrence had their heads together.
"She was saying, I've let you all down, especially my husband. You see, we have the salmon for you, but they're floating frozen in the upstairs bathtub."
Thunderbrow turned into a rabbit.
"Dear lady, don't worry about it. No, these things happen."
"All the time."
Just then Mother signaled. The fish was done. So we all followed Dr. Lawrence, where he was singing,
"Defer, defer,"
into the dining room. Into the dining room came Thunderbrow, Mrs. Lawrence on his arm. Dr. Lawrence said,
"I, the Lord High Executioner, have not one bird for you Canadians, but 12, and now the fish you've all been waiting for."
Monica set the platter down. Dr. Lawrence stared. He said, "I thought we were having salmon."
Mrs. Lawrence said, "It seems to have turned into a headache."
And Thunderbrow said,
"Ladies and gentlemen, what could be better? We can have salmon any old time, but this fish... I've read about this fish in Dr. Heffenreffer's famous study. Yeah, this is the migraine headache."
Everybody laughed. They ate all the fish, but they just wanted to get back to singing. It was after midnight. They all went down the path, onto the bus, singing,
"Defer, defer."
Well, Monica helped me with the last two problems. Dad and Mum and I stayed around, cleaned up till after 1 with the Lawrences. So finally, Dad and Mum and I crossing the street, and I stopped. Oh, I had a brand new equation. A bathtub filled with water, with a frozen turkey and 2 frozen salmon, plus Mrs. Lawrence, equal the kind of mind I want to have. And it's way beyond X.
J. O'Callaghan here in the Connection Studio with his gift for us of stories. Why do you suppose it is? Because as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking that as a kid, the adult parties that I observed, they had this kind of magic about them. People who were normally so serious and the people who meted out the discipline, relaxing a little bit.
Yes.
Did you see the same thing in Pill Hill? Was it a little lighter, a little looser with such eccentric neighbors?
Yeah, of course, the Lawrences had a wonderful, wild openness. But you make me think of a second thing, Dick, and that is, I do think when you're young, the mind is very poetic. It notices so many things, particularly when you're 4 or 5, but right up through the teen years, there is this poetic awareness of everything. Then I think we get too busy to notice as sharply. But the second thing, that relaxing, I love to watch that, and I love to see the Lawrences melt people so that these people like a Thunderbrow suddenly become the hero of the party. Thunderbrow was the villain. This turns around, and she's charmed. Good night, Doctor. I'm so glad you came. And she was so glad he came at the end.
There is a Mrs. Lawrence in all our lives, is there not?
Exactly. That's what I love to tell about. There is a Mrs. Lawrence, and they are those wonderful people who don't get just on a single track and remain mysteriously themselves.
But can be as attractive or as charming to a child's eye, yeah, as to the adult company at the same time. I think that's very rare.
That's true. There's a story, I don't have time, but it's a story of our first meeting, Mrs. Lawrence, and being fascinated. And she says, we love some ice cream and Dickens. We all sit down, we're little kids, thinking Dickens is a kind of ice cream, a kind of cake. Turns out to be a book, and she has it. And she reads to us.
You got ice cream out of it. How bad could it be? Jay O'Callaghan is with me in the Connection studio on this Christmas morning. We're back after the break. We have one more story for you this morning. It is a good night's rest and an opportunity to look forward to a little bit of downtime if you're one of those lucky enough to get it over this holiday season. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Jay O'Callaghan is in the studio with me this Christmas morning. No need to go to the telephone to call in today. A chance to relax in the seat of the car or wherever you are next to the radio and just enjoy some storytelling, which is what Jay does for a living. I began the program, Jay, by talking about stories on the radio as in many ways like a gift, something that you can give to somebody else. Do you think of them in the same way?
I do. I've discovered a couple of things doing workshops, that everybody is creative. And one of the ways we create unknowingly is shaping stories with images and language and details. And we're not relying then on the poet and the writer who's published, but we're just creating. And everyone does it. And it's a gift.
Have you got a gift for, say, a story that would illustrate this in some way for us?
Yes, I would love to tell you. A good night's rest. A few years ago, somebody said to me they wanted a good night's rest, and I thought of that phrase. Where had I heard it? Then I remembered, and I called Mrs. Wallace. The Wallaces lived on Pill Hill for a while when I was a boy. I said, can I come over, Mrs. Wallace? I think you'll remember part of a story. So I made an appointment, and I drove over it. I thought, oh, am I wasting her time? Mrs. Lawrence would keep me up to date. She would say, Dorothy Wallace, you know, she's in her 50s and she's studying Shakespeare at Harvard. Dorothy Wallace tells me the Red Sox are going to achieve some kind of impossible dream. Dorothy Wallace, she's very interested in a jazz man whose first name is the past tense of a verb, ran Blake. So I thought, am I wasting her time? Well, I got to the Wallace's. I hadn't seen this house, a beautiful house. Mrs. Wallace invited me into the living room. She had tea ready. We sat down, and I said, I hope I'm not wasting your time, but you remember part of a story about the bike? The bike! She said, the bike? I think I know. The bike, go ahead. I said, well, this is the time you were going to supper at the Lawrence's. No, she said, forget I'm here. Just tell the story. Well, that freed me.
I was 17 years old, hot August night. Almost 9 o'clock, just getting dark, I was playing canball with Todd Adams on forceps. I had the broomstick he was pitching in the can. We'd been hitting in a half an hour. It was like a gnarled missile. Well, I swung. I got a line drive. The can shot off of Todd's head, over the Lawrence's fence, right over the yard, right toward the kitchen window at the last second. It just missed the kitchen window. Oh, I was so glad. 3 days before, it had gone right through the kitchen window. 3 days before that, right through the kitchen window. And Dr. Lawrence, he liked us, but he hated canball. I heard, "Bravo!" And I turned. It was Mrs. Wallace. Just gotten out of her car, and she was evidently going up the path to the Lawrence's for supper. But there was something about the "Bravo" that wasn't quite right. Todd Adams came over, and he said, "Dr. Wallace is in the hospital. I think he's dying." Dr. Wallace. I didn't know him well. When I was 10, I took a shortcut one day, went down their gravel path. Dr. Wallace was standing there, and he was looking up in a tree. He saw me. He said, "I guess I'll call the fire department." There was a little kitty, a little orange kitty, way up in the tree. I said, "Oh, no, no, I'll get it. I'm a great climber." I climbed up and got the kitty. So he reached for his wallet. I said, "No, I love climbing." 2 days later, in the mail, I got this white envelope addressed to me. Opened it up. Dr. Wallace's fancy stationery. And with a pen, he had drawn a tree and a little stick figure of a boy and a little kitty. And down below, in big block letters, "My hero." Well, I love that. Now he was dying, and he was just Dad's age. And that's what it had been, the "Bravo." Usually, if she would say "Bravo," it would be followed by this cascade of laughter. There'd been no laughter. Well, just then, my little brother and sister, they were 6 and 8 years old, came running out of the Lawrences. We were always back and forth with the Lawrences. We were like one family. Well, they were giggling, and I said, "What's so funny?" They said, "Charlie." Charlie Lawrence was 9. Charlie lost his boa constrictor again. He was always losing the boa constrictor, and they would never tell the guests. My sister called it Julius Squeezer. Well, 10 o'clock that night, I was getting into bed. I needed my sleep. I needed my sleep because I had a great summer job. I worked for the last of the Boston Icemen, James Panos, powerful Greek man, in his late 60s now. He had delivered ice long years ago to Babe Ruth when he was pitching in Boston. So I would get up at 3:30 in the morning, have breakfast at the very latest 4 o'clock. I'd be on my bike. I would bike all the way down to Faneuil Hall Market in Boston. Lock my bike, stand under the dark statue of Sam Adams. Sometimes it'd be a sailor sleeping in the flowers there. And then out of the dark would come the ice truck rumbling over the cobblestones. Mr. Panos, "Get in, boy! Let's go, boy!" Off we'd go. We would lift up these iron plates in the sidewalks of Boston, and we would lower hundreds of pounds of ice to cool the drinking fountains, then ice to the restaurants. As dawn was coming, I'd be in Fulton Fish Market dumping crushed ice into the display window, and I would see the rising sun reflected in the slivers of ice. We would work 8, sometimes 10 hours, and then I'd bike back, so I needed my sleep. So 10 o'clock, I'm getting into bed, and across the street at the Lawrence's, I learned later, they were just sitting down to supper. Mrs. Lawrence had many gifts, but getting supper on time was not the gift. Mrs. Lawrence was there, and Dr. Lawrence, and Monica, kind of my girlfriend, she was there, and Charlie was 9. Mrs. Lawrence was saying, "Dorothy, Dorothy, this is a hard time for you, Dorothy. You're going to spend the night here. You're going to get a good night's rest. You'll be a different woman in the morning. You'll be in Monica's bedroom. You won't hear a thing. No, it's all set. Monica's going to be in Craig's study." So it was all settled. 11 o'clock, Mrs. Wallace is about to go up the stairs, and the door open, and in come the Norwegians, the 3 graduate students living in the top of the Lawrences. They'd been to the Mikado, and everyone had to sing. So everyone brought down to the piano room, and they sing till after midnight, and finally Mrs. Wallace escapes. She goes up, and by 12:30 she's had a sleeping pill, and she's asleep. Well, 3 hours later at my house, 3:30 in the morning, I'm getting up, and I'm groggy. Have my breakfast in the kitchen, and I look up in the clock. It's 4 o'clock. I have dawdle. I've got to really move it. I run down the stairs, grab my bike, and I go 3 feet. Darn, I've got a flat tire, a flat. It's too late to fix the flat. Darn. Monica Lawrence has got an English bicycle. I can borrow it, but the trouble is sometimes it's in the cellar, sometimes in the back of the house. She keeps it everywhere. I ran up their path, up their back stairs, and then I opened their door. We never locked doors in Pill Hill, but I had those big boots on, and they had the dog Jones. If Jones woke up, the whole house would be up. I started up the creaking back stairs. Then I went down the hall to Monica's room, and I froze. The bathroom door shut. There's a streak of light. Someone is in the bathroom. I made it to the end of the hall. Monica's bedroom door, a big oak door, glass handle. I turned it slowly, and I opened it. Monica, wake up. I have a flat. Monica, nothing. Monica, wake up. I didn't want to go in her bedroom. I finally took two steps. Monica, please wake up. I've got a flat. Nothing. I didn't know what to do, so I went over, and I finally shook her shoulders. Monica, She didn't wake, though, so I pulled her hair. Monica, wake up. She sat up. We were nose to nose. Monica's face was turning into Mrs. Wallace's. I was so stunned. All I could do was back up, saying, flat, 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 flat. I backed right across the hall into Charlie's room. He told me later he thought I was a burglar, because I bent over and he grabbed me. Charlie, just me. I need a bike. I got a flat tire. Where's Monica's? In the garage. It's never in the garage. It's in the garage. Sorry to wake you. I went running down the stairs. I forgot about Jones, the sausage dog. Oh, Jones, he's running now with me. Jones, quiet, quiet, quiet. Quiet, Jones. Quiet, Jones. I opened the door and he's running with me right across the lawn. I went into the teen green garage, got that bike, and I shot down Pill Hill. And Mrs. Wallace, that's what I remember of the story. Mrs. Wallace smiled, and she sat back, opened her hands, and she said, I am going to tell you the rest of the story. I did get to the hospital the next day to see my husband. I was exhausted. I had one of these broad summer hats. I was about to go into my husband's hospital room. I bumped into a doctor, so I staggered into my husband's room. I'm staggering around. My hat's falling off. My husband, who was dying, sits up and says, can I help you? I sat down, and I told my husband that I'd been to the Lawrences. I said, Edie Lawrence said if I had a good night's rest, I'd be a different woman in the morning. My husband smiled because he knew the Lawrences. I said, I was about to go up the stairs, 11 o'clock, and the door opened, and a herd of Norwegians came in. Well, three of them anyway. You know, they're the graduate students at MIT. They'd been to the Mikado, so we were all escorted down in the piano room. We were all singing till after midnight. I finally escaped. I went up to my bedroom, and 12:30, I have a sleeping pill, and I'm sound asleep, and I have the strangest nightmare. I'm dreaming that someone's shaking my shoulders, and I'm thinking, well, it's a sleeping pill. And someone seemed to be pulling my hair. So I sat up, and someone was receding, chanting an incantation. I thought, if this is real, it's odd, even for the Lawrences. I sat back, and then I hear someone running down the stairs. That dog of theirs yapping like mad. So I get up, and I go out into the hall. The bathroom door opens, and there is Craig Lawrence, one of the great migraine headache specialists. He's clad only in the New Yorker. Well, he fled, and I fled. I got into bed. I've got to get some sleep. I couldn't sleep. That dog of theirs is yapping like mad in the yard. Oh, Edie Lawrence doesn't go downstairs. She opens the window and she calls down, will one desist, Jones? Well, of course, Jones didn't desist. Half an hour this goes on, I hear someone creeping down the stairs, so I get up and look down. Craig Lawrence is down there talking with a policeman. Someone complained. Monica's in the yard running around trying to catch the dog. She finally gets the dog, brings the dog in. I can finally get some sleep. It's 4:30 in the morning. So I lie back on the pillow and someone is coming in my bedroom with a flashlight. Who's that? It's me, Charlie. What do you want, Charlie? Nothing. You want nothing. I'm looking for something. What are you looking for? Nothing. It's all right. It's not here. Don't worry. Well, until then, I hadn't been worried. He left. I hear whispering in the hall, so I get up and open the door just a bit. Edie Lawrence is in the hall saying to Charlie, where did you see the boa constrictor last? He's pointing in my room. I got up. I got fully dressed. I armed myself with a wooden hanger, and I read Agatha Christie till 7:30 in the morning. Then I went down to get a cup of coffee. The kitchen is jammed with people. Edie Lawrence says, did you have a good night's rest? A good night's rest. The Norwegians are singing from the Mikado. They sit me down. I have a musical breakfast, and that's why I'm late to the hospital.
My husband looked at me and said, "And you're a different woman."
And then my husband, sitting in the hospital bed, starts laughing. And the wonderful thing about that is, it's the last time he ever laughed. He died the next day. Mrs. Wallace and I sat finishing our tea. She walked me to the door, and she said, "As for wasting my time, not at all. For at least one night of my life, you are the man of my dreams."
J. O'Callaghan, one of his stories, this one, A Good Night's Rest. I listen to you tell the stories, Jay, and I think to myself, there's about 14 or 15 narrative strings going on in that one. The snake comes back long after I've forgotten. Yes. Julius Squeezer. But I've heard the story before, and I'm hearing little bits that are different each time. People who are listening to us should know that you've no paper in front of you. You're just pulling this out of your memory half the time with your eyes closed.
Yes, that's when I see the characters. I haven't shut them. I have to be careful on stage. But I do really see them there. I do shape these stories with great care around certain images. And I will never forget the image of creeping into the bedroom and shaking her hair and Mrs. Wallace sitting up. And the shark, what could I say except flat, 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 flat.
The stories are a gift. And I want to thank you for coming into the studio on this Christmas morning and sharing them with us.
Oh, thank you. What a wonderful treat this is for me. Thank you, Dick.
Well, the best to you and your family on this
day. And
you. J. O'Callaghan in the Connection Studio. I'm Dick Gordon.